Malcolm Honlein is with us. It's time for the weekly update. Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations. Mr. Honlein, welcome back to JM and the AM.
Good to be with you, Nachum.
Appreciate that. So I always joke with you that when people ask me about inside information that I might have from somebody in Israel or in the government, and I, of course, you know, try not to laugh as I give them the, you know, the soft landing that I don't know much. I can only imagine if that happens to me during the week, how often it happens to you. You, in fact, though, often have definitive information. I bring this up, of course, because one of the great curiosities has been, how did Israel pull this off? On the assumption, and Malcolm, you could address this as well, on the assumption that it was, in fact, Israel that pulled this off. And Malcolm, there are things that, you know, we as basic human beings can understand. We get the miracle of the Six-Day War. We understand that sometimes military victories are, in fact, unexpected and incredible. And we get the rescue at Entebbe. We see the movie and we understand, you know, how they pulled it off. What's your answer when people ask how this incredible operation against actual terrorists, one by one, was pulled off?
Well, I think this is going to be the subject of some great movies in the years to come. There's still a lot of speculation. Israel hasn't acknowledged anything. There are some leaks and analysis of the some of the explosive items that at least give some explanation, potential explanation of how this happened. But I think the coordination, the fact that this remained a secret was also remarkable for something that took years to put into place. The foresight, and I think psychologically this was a big boost for Israelis and Friends of Israel, again, after some of the intelligence failures, something that was needed. But more than that, you think of the impact that it had. Number one, it identified the operatives of Hezbollah, and Israel hacked into some of the hospital records, so not only did they get them there, but they found out what their names and who they are. But second, it was minimizing any civilian casualties, because by definition, those who were carrying it, these items, the pagers, the walkie-talkies, were operatives of Hezbollah. It destroyed their ability to communicate for the time being. I know that friends of mine in Lebanon told me that there were celebrations, quiet celebrations in the street. People who hate the Hezbollah in Lebanon were really delighted with this. But others were taking their television sets out of their houses, were taking anything else that moved. And there's a cartoon that went around of Nasrallah in the bathroom staring at his electric toothbrush and afraid to pick it up. And many more creative responses. But think of the foresight, the execution, and the fact that they were able to carry this out in the way they did was really remarkable. People forget it a day afterwards, and of course it gets superseded then by all of the mythologies that always arise when you have an incident like this. But I'm telling you that the practical implications on Hezbollah operations on the ground, it's not going to stop them, but it's certainly crippling to them in many ways, and that term is really appropriate here. Right. And you know, I think people should not engage in speculation, because a lot of it is wild and people coming up with theories. But the operation clearly was well thought out and well executed. We have Hezbollah will obviously get aid from Iran again, and Hezbollah still has support within some of the Shia populations in Lebanon and has, you know, entrenched itself. They offer financial rewards to people. They provide assistance. They were also operating in Syria, and I can tell you that a lot of Syrians were very happy to see the explosions taking place, because they too do not like Hezbollah, and they come in and they act in very extremist ways, because by their very nature they're a terror organization, and they terrorize wherever they're based.
it's now the middle of 2024, and I know you say it takes years, but what does that mean? This has been, and again, I know you're guessing, and I know you're just, you know, basing this on whatever information you may have gotten over the last few days, but it likely was being worked on for what, 3 years, 4 years, and is it possible to be that length of time in preparation?
Yes.
That's amazing. When you think about it, and the secrecy is not what amazes me. What amazes me is the accuracy and how they were able to actually pull it off.
I think both are miracles. When you have secrecy in Israel, that's already an achievement. But it definitely goes back to the early 2020s and had to been thought out and developed, because when we find out who owned the companies, whether there were front companies that were set up in different places to be able to get the stuff packed in to develop the technology so it didn't go off prematurely. There are some who say that it was not intended to be done now, but that somebody may have uncovered or discovered that there was this strange substance in their pager, and they had to activate it, or whether this was in fact the time it was intended. But the bottom line is what's important, is that right. Hezbollah, now you see maximum pressure, that Israel is hitting them more than any time since October 7th in Lebanon, hitting their targets. Because I think the message is now, you either join or you either come to terms now, or we go all out, because they can't tolerate this constant barrage, 150, 200, 130
And Israel's prepared to go all out for how long? And Israel's prepared to go all out for how long?
As long as it will take, but this will be a ground operation, which is very complicated. Remember, Lebanon is mountainous. They have the infrastructure built in. If you think the underground system in Gaza was impressive, wait till you see what they have in southern Lebanon. Something I saw and I talked about on the show, what, 10 years ago, 12 years ago, more than that, when we were told and we were shown pictures of some of the stuff, that every house in southern Lebanon had a rocket room. And the underground, literally underground city in southern Lebanon, where the terrorists can move from place to place. We couldn't have imagined it the way we can today, having seen in Gaza what we did. I think we have a better picture of what this underground capacity really is. So, you know, the time has come, and going back to the Latani River would be a first step. That was part of UN Resolution 1701. It was what they were obligated to do, was what UNIFIL was supposed to prevent any weapons coming south of the Latani into the region along Israel's border. They did nothing. They sat in their camps. Every once in a while, they would wander out, and then Hezbollah would confront them, and they ran back to their camps. And all of this infrastructure, including tunnels leading into Israel from Lebanon, which I went into one where the Israeli soldiers had put a mezuzah up on the front door, the part in Israel. And but it's so sophisticated, Nahum. It doesn't go across like everybody would think of a tunnel, like a subway. It goes down, it spirals down. So unless on the surface you hit the exact area where that is taking place, you don't find it as normally you would on a tunnel that you could right. hit at any point along its route. Yeah. And they're reinforced. They're built into concrete with electronic systems, with air conditioning, with communication systems. It's far bigger and more
right. sophisticated. Right. Some of that we saw from the videos from Gaza. You're saying it's even more so.
Even more so there.
Yeah. Yeah,
and we have, of course, more sophisticated weapons. What Israel did in Syria, which did not get the recognition that we talked about, how the raid that Israel carried off there was right. incredible. And the damage they did is great, because it was part of Iran's infrastructure, both in Syria, but most of all for their supply to Hezbollah.
You know, and look, the average age of this audience continues to grow. Obviously, that's how, you know, life in this industry works, especially as I continue to get older. And now, you know, I'm a grandfather. You're a great-grandfather. Mazal Tov again on the big event 2 weeks ago. And, you know, and maybe that's why we're just even more sensitive to this. The numbers, the sheer numbers, forget about when you read their stories and visit Har Herzl, but the sheer numbers of young people that we have lost since October 7th is so mammoth. And I ask you, is it possible for Israel, I'm asking you this as a grandparent, is it possible for Israel to achieve the objective up north without a ground invasion? Can they do it all by air? Are there other, as we saw this week, are there other methods that will debilitate Hezbollah enough without a full-scale ground invasion?
You know, that's a question with which the military have wrestled. The question was true about Gaza. And you see in Gaza that without going in, without being able to blow up hundreds of factories and storage sites and, you know, and other capacities that Hamas had built into Gaza, let alone the tunnel system, et cetera, you could not root them out. And even today, having been in there now for almost a year and having such extensive raids and carrying out the attacks and having dominance in the air, and still they've talked now about having to do it again in the north because they keep regrouping. And until you root them all out, until you kill the vast majority of these terrorists, until you capture the weapons procurement systems and replace the government, won't be a pro-Israel government, but certainly one that will not allow this to continue, and you get the commitment of the Arab countries, especially Egypt and others, to live up to their responsibilities, it doesn't work. And in Lebanon, which was, and Hezbollah was Iran's main ally, not Islamic Jihad and Hamas, that the and the infrastructure there is far greater. But still, they still have a capacity of over 100,000 missiles, despite all that they've fired, and many of them more sophisticated. That the necessity to go in and to be able to clean it out and push them, but because of the range of the missiles they have now, going to the Latani is not enough. And what there has to be a change, and I think that the ultimate answer is that we get rid of these regimes, that they has to, that Lebanon at one time was an ally of Israel during the Jamal regime, and could be again. I think many people would be, but you have to root out this ideology. You have to, it's like a cancerous growth that creates claws and grabs into to various areas. They have to be rooted out, or it will keep coming back in more virulent forms. And so the answer to your question is that aerial things are a postponement. They can diminish their capacity. It doesn't eradicate it.
It postpones the inevitable. You know, it's interesting because whatever the figure is, I don't know if 2,000 people were taken out, I don't know, 5,000, whatever the number was in this operation. And when we think, at least, you know, I think I'm representing a lot of people when I say this, when we think of terrorist operations, we think that 5,000 is a massive number. Like Israel has taken out, I don't know, 80% of their, you know, capability in terms of manpower. But based on what you said earlier in this conversation, it sounds like there are plenty of volunteers and those ready to be paid to replace those who were killed. Is that the case? Is this only a dent? It might be a severe dent, but is this only a dent in the manpower of the terrorists up north?
So I don't want to diminish the significance of it by saying it's only a dent. It's more than that, because remember that Hezbollah gave these out to selected individuals who obviously had operational and other roles. Right. And not that many were killed. Many were wounded. Many were physically incapacitated, at least for now. Right. I'm sure some and many will come back. But for now, they certainly disrupted their entire system. So the number is, and because it's a targeted population, is much more significant. This is not going to decapitate Hezbollah. We have to, at some point, remove Nasrallah and the rest of the leadership, though many have been eliminated. And to deal with the infrastructure in Lebanon, remember, they control the economy. They're a terror organization. They control the government by virtue of the terror that they visit upon the people of Lebanon, which is why they would be relieved, too, to get rid of this regime.
And they think twice before using their microwave, frankly, which also, you know, strikes some fear in them.
Absolutely. Everybody questions whether they, you know, everything in the country is rigged. You know, even the entry pads to some of the Hezbollah buildings, I was told yesterday, you know, exploded. And other facilities that we don't even know about and nobody's talking about also did. So the, you know, they don't know. And that's the psychological warfare right. is very important because they visit that upon Israel. Look at the fear of people in Israel. In fact, that 60 or 80,000 are out of the north.
Talk about they had this coming to them. I mean, that's an understatement.
That's right. And you don't see, you know, of course, people will condemn, but you see the world looking at this with admiration and respecting it and seeing that it was targeted, and those who won't be fair about it, you know, will recognize that when you're dealing with a terrorist organization that abides by no rules and that engages in the horrific thing, and you saw what they did to the hostages, the treatment that we've heard, keeping people in cages now for a year and for almost a year. I mean, I can't even think about it because it's so unsettling and so horrific to think about the suffering that they impose on people.
America's one and only Jewish Moments in the Morning radio program, heard on listener-sponsored digital radio. Around the world, the web at NahumSiegel.com and the Nahum Siegel Network, and of course on the beloved NSN app. You talk about the admiration, and I think you're right about that, and we'll get to the dissension in a minute. So embarrassed by some of the public officials here, but whatever. You've quoted John Spencer a million times, and if you had this in front of you, I'm sure you'd do it again. Historic and unprecedented, he says. I cannot find a similar intelligence military operation with such secrecy, lethality, ingenuity, audacity, impact. While there have been other major intelligence operations in war or surprise attacks, and he notes D-Day, Pearl Harbor, etc., but nothing so targeted, lethal use of force, precise, proportionate, and distinction as many enemy hit over such a wide geographic area. Your analysis of his analysis.
Well, as you know, I've become a big fan of his. He teaches at West Point. He's one of the world's leading experts on urban warfare, and says that Israel has conducted this in the most humane way of any urban warfare, where their kill ratio, meaning the number of civilians killed to military, is the lowest that had been recorded, and certainly lower than in American wars and in other wars. And because he is a recognized expert, his words really carry weight. And we have a few people like that, generals in Great Britain, others, those who have visited Gaza, even in recent weeks, keep coming back and saying, guys, this is distortion. This is a war being fought in a limited way, that Israel is taking the risk upon itself and its troops in the way it's conducting it, not and moving the populations from one place to another. That's not a war crime. That's meant to protect them, because you have an enemy that uses them as human shields, continues to use them as human shields. These are not heroic figures. And when somebody like Spence comes out with the kind of analysis that should be taken seriously, people should feel confident in being able to defend Israel, to speak up for it, as he is, and has a number of generals who actually went into Gaza to look firsthand at what was going on, and from Britain, from other countries, listen to what they say, and you realize how little information we're getting from the American media, how much the American media has bought into the lies, distortions, because they don't have reporters on the ground. They have Palestinian stringers who feed them information, that the bias we see in other regards is certainly true today in regard to Israel, that you hardly have any source of news that is not biased and not distorting the reality on the ground. You know, people bought into the lies. It came out now as they assess the year, almost a year, 50,000 trucks of aid went into Gaza. Wow. 50,000 trucks loads, over a million tons, which is enough to feed everybody. So the lie of, and they continue to expose the lie that Israel's starving them, that there isn't enough food. There may be areas with not enough food because Hamas steals it. You see the truck drivers now, people went into Gaza, said that there were trucks with food rotting one after another because they don't, on the Palestinian side, not on Israel's side, because they don't distribute, because truck drivers are afraid to go to drive there because Hamas threatens them, shoots them. They steal the food, they sell it, then in the marketplaces, the markets are full of food. It's one of the distortions, one of the many lies that people buy into. And only when people with expertise, but most of the media and the world is not interested. United Nations doesn't weigh this when they take a resolution to seek the Palestinians, when they pass a resolution overwhelmingly against Israel, and call for them to remove the Jews even from Jerusalem, you know that the facts don't matter now. We're living in an era of lies and distortions and misrepresentation. And only thing is that it's more efficient than any time in the past because of the internet, because of the use of bots and the use of other means that even, for instance, the communications to the White House and to senators, we've found that the vast majority were generated by these systems. They're not really coming from serious people. So they say overwhelmingly 10 to 1 anti-Israel stuff. It's because you have these operations in the systems to produce that.
Wow. Yeah, we could spend the whole show on the UN vote, but we may save that. Because one other thing I have to ask you about the operation itself before we get to the United States, because the election is really soon. I got to ask you a couple of questions. One more thing about the operation. The Israelis, the Mossad, if they pulled this off, you know, if it's them who's responsible for it, they need manpower themselves, right? I'm assuming that there are operatives within Hezbollah that are suggesting, hey, let's get rid of cell phones and go to a beeper system, and hey, we should do this and that. And you know, there's got to be people who are on the ground actually infiltrating them. Now, I don't know if it's three people or 300 people, but I assume it's got to be somewhere between that, right?
It's a good assumption, and yes, there had to be cooperative people in the whole system, maybe not even knowing what the ultimate goal was.
Right.
Because this,
right.
I'm told that the number of people who knew the real details of this is less than a handful.
Wow, unbelievable.
Because you know that Israelis also leak, and everybody, you know, they're all out there. Even when they don't know, they still leak it, and it does a lot of damage. But what you're saying is valid, and sometimes people cooperate without knowing, but be able to anticipate that they would switch to walkie-talkies, and to realize what they were doing, or because they had people there who encouraged them to think of walkie-talkies as a backup measure.
Many Democratic senators, progressives and moderates alike, are declaring support for the audacious operation against Hezbollah that detonated thousands of pagers and walkie-talkies used by the operatives in Lebanon while limiting civilian casualties amid criticism from left-wing lawmakers such as Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who harshly criticized Israel for the operation. A number of Democratic senators who criticized Israel's handling of the war in Gaza nonetheless offered praise for the stunning targeted attacks against Hezbollah. Israel has not claimed responsibility, et cetera, et cetera. Your point exactly, that even those who've been critical have a pretty large measure of respect for what Israel was able to do here, the intelligence behind the operation. I use that word, you know, in two different ways. The intelligence behind the operation and the fact that it was targeted. And that's what made her comments so outrageous. I get it that a 9-year-old girl was among the victims. I get it. And there's terrible collateral damage in all of this, mostly caused by the enemy, frankly. But all right, we don't have to get into that now. This audience knows that. But I mean, come on, to use this opportunity to talk about civilians getting hurt or civilians being killed when Israel went ahead and used such an incredibly targeted operation to knock out these Hezbollah operatives. So, I mean, she's outrageous generally. I get it. I don't know how many in Congress agree with her, but the statement looked completely outrageous in the aftermath of this episode.
First of all, there's nothing I think that would shock us anymore by the ignorant comments, the biased, the hateful comments that come from AOC and the other members of the SQUID. I think that you can judge Israel's success by the criticism and the nature of the enemies that have voiced themselves. The fact that the United Nations, all these countries line up, it is why the world is in the conditions in. It is why a democracy is damaged, and why this battle increasingly is being come to be understood by those who really get it, who understand the nature of warfare and this war, and who've been there, like these generals, is beginning to understand that this is a war about the West. This is a war for America's future. This is a war about the democracy and values. Israel is the front line, as it always is. It is the scapegoat. But what's at stake here is so much greater. And you realize that when you see all the infrastructure, all the investment, you see how Iran and others ally with it. You see what the Houthis are doing, how the Ring of Fire, which we spoke about for so long and warned about, you see how it's operational. And that if the West had been determined, and if they would stand behind Israel, and all the weapons that it needs would be supplied when you hear the countries. Now Germany is denying that they cut weapons, and yet they cut some weapons and they didn't cut others. There's truth here that they're holding up, and Canada cuts off the weapon supplies.
Right.
Who are they hurting? They're hurting themselves. They're hurting the West. They're hurting the future for all of our kids and all the generations to come. Israel is fighting the battle for everyone and paying the price for it.
And when
you say about a 9-year-old, wait and see what their true facts are about this. How many times, because the Malav was responsible, if that's, or they're completely manufactured.
And they made the point. Yeah, I'm sorry.
No, here, that is not the case. We saw it. We see the damage that was done. But the targets and the people who bore the brunt of this, and to have an operation where you spare you limit in such a way the collateral damage, is truly amazing.
Many commentators are making the point of, or pointing out, I should say, how Israel clearly did not inform the United States about it and didn't feel that they in any way could be cooperative with them, which I think is a statement in and of itself. But someone did, one of the commentators said that there were those officials in Great Britain who were helpful. Did you hear this about English help that was coming to Israel while the whole situation was kept secret from the United States?
I did not.
Oh, interesting. And also,
I wouldn't trust the British at all.
No, I get that. But the U.S. piece I found interesting as well. Also, Bibi officially canceled his trip to the United States?
I'm not sure.
Because that was the word that came out once his operation took place. I was also wondering whether he may change his mind again and actually show up next week. Remember, everybody, UN week next week. We'll talk more Friday about some of the things happening at the UN both this week and next. The other thing is that Nasrallah, who took the opportunity, it's amazing, by the way, this guy, when he says he's speaking, I don't know why he gets so much attention. It's really incredible. But anyway, He again, you know, told the world that Israel's going to pay the price for this and the retaliation is going to be so strong, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, wouldn't you agree that in recent times when he's done this, when he's gone public and he's, you know, made the state of my terror organization address, wouldn't you say that mostly it's been veiled threats, that they really haven't hit Israel as hard as they threatened to in his speeches, and this likely, especially after, you know, what they just went through, the hit that they just took, that this also likely is a veiled threat?
Look, they have capacity, and they have missiles, long-range missiles, they have with guidance systems. They did not want this to spiral out of control. They're not prepared for an all-out war. Iran doesn't want to see all of their investment in Lebanon. Iran is interested in Lebanon for its protection. They want to use these missiles as a deterrent from Israel striking their nuclear capacity. And they keep sending that message to Israel and to the world that if you go after our nuclear sites and you hit our sites, we will unleash all of this and we will hit Dimona, we will hit the Kiryat, we will hit all these other places.
Right.
So that for them, they don't care about the people of Lebanon. They don't even care about Lebanon in general, except that it's a base of operation. Their investment there, which was the prime investment, even more than the Hamas, is as a deterrent and to give it the capacity to try and limit Israel's strikes. So while they've shown they can launch 150 missiles and drones, and some of them get through, and Israel's—it's amazing still that the Arrow and the Iron Dome and other things work, and maybe Iron Beam will in fact come online, which would be a laser defense system, which is a lot less expensive to use. People have to remember that every time they shoot one of those Iron Dome things, it's $50,000. Right. It's not cheap to do this. And when you have to do it against hundreds of missiles, even in a single day, more than 100. So for Iran, the major investment is that they want to keep it intact, because otherwise then they lose their leverage to prevent Israel from hitting them.
Right.
Gaza was not that was not meant for that purpose, and therefore, whether they knew in advance or not is irrelevant to the fact that they created the capacity and continue to supply and support them.
All right, I don't know if we're going to get to the assassination plot against Bibi. We could, I guess, hold that until next week if necessary. But there's an election coming up in the United States, as you know. And I just need your look. I'm not looking for an endorsement. Not looking for anybody leaning anywhere. Just an analysis from you. I think there's plenty to worry about from both candidates. Aren't you uncomfortable? Aren't you uncomfortable? And don't you think it's silly when the president, when the former president of the United States, talks about how Israel is going to be finished if he is not elected president? That's the message he delivers yesterday to a Jewish group in Washington. That's number one. And then I think it's also, I don't want to say silly, but it's also, you know, something to think about when the Democratic nominee for president is proudly discussing weapons that have been held back from Israel, the greatest ally of the United States in the Middle East. So when you see these two making those types of statements, it's 5 weeks away, 6 weeks away, whatever it is right now. What are your thoughts?
Well, it's a very complicated situation. I do think it's very regrettable to say, you know, that Israel at any time will not be there, it will be destroyed. We believe in, for religious and secular and all the reasons necessary, that Israel will be there. It is true that we need allies. The United States is a critical factor. The fact that the, you know, aircraft carrier, even though one was removed, that one is still there, is a deterrent, is an important statement, the relationship between Israel and CENTCOM. But remember, this is for America's defense as well. America has a huge amount at stake, and we don't have that many allies right now who are willing to stand with us because they don't trust the United States. They don't trust the word of the West anymore. I mean, this is a question that really deserves a two-hour discussion, not you know, headlines, which then ends up distorting the message. But I think that the candidates really have to be a lot more careful, and there are things being done. You know, that supposedly the Republican National Committee created a thing about how pro-Israel Harris is to play in Muslim-populated areas in Michigan and Pennsylvania. I haven't seen it, so I don't know if it's fully true, but the media, a lot of newspapers have carried the report, and the other side as well. So when we have to look at what are the candidates say, not to the Jewish audiences, and what do they say when they appear before general audiences. I think Trump's message is consistent. He says the same things, even if some of them, you know, we would prefer he didn't, but you know, his message is consistent. But there, you know, the difference of emphasis about, you know, we told them we have to stop now, or even hinting that there would be a reconsideration, which is not what Harris did, but you saw that Senator Sanders, others, and they're moving resolutions.
Right. Well, I didn't like that she was proud about the fact that she withheld, that her administration withheld weapons.
I understand. And you know, then they deny that they withheld weapons, but the record is clear. Certainly the bunker buster bombs were withheld for a long time, but the 2,000-pound bombs and others, other equipment, at the same time, they continued to supply huge amounts of weapons. And my point was that Israel doesn't have many sources today in the world. And while Canada supplied a small percentage, and Germany a small percentage, the Germans now deny that they're holding up weapons. But when you talk about special responsibility, that's when it translates, is when Israel's in danger, when the threat is as imminent as it is today. We should never take for granted where Israel is at. And the importance of the U.S.-Israel relationship is critical. It's also critical in terms of how the other countries in the region see Israel and see what risks they're prepared to take if they don't believe that the West can be relied on, and if the United States can't be relied on. And our own capacities are limited to supply our own troops and to supply Ukraine and supply here. So, you know, none of these are simple things, and therefore words matter. Words on the campaign trail matter. And people should look very carefully. Don't assume that just because somebody said that this was said was true. But and we should all can assume safely that Israel will be here in 2 years. It obviously, who gets elected will have an impact. And who the people, look at the nature of the people they will bring in. Look at some of the people they appoint, which will be coming much more subject of scrutiny, I'm sure, in the coming weeks. All of those things really matter.
Yeah. Unbelievable. All right, a million topics we didn't get to. Hopefully next week, please God. Thank you so much for joining us. Have a wonderful Shabbos.
Have a great Shabbos.
Malcolm Honlein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations. Boy, what a world we're in, huh? Unbelievable.